Stretch Scrolling for July 11th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Centennial Chip Essenfly.
And I'm Pam Fedor.
We are back with another story from the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes, which we are almost at the end of. We have a few more stories to get through. Today, there's a story from the casebook of Sherlock Holmes. This, The Adventure of the Three Garadebs. But yeah, Chip, you are Centennial Chip Hessenflow today because this is episode 100 of Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. Congratulations to both of you.
Well, you know, COVID-19,
you.
We'd like to thank COVID. COVID's really helped us out.
See? Good things happen in a pandemic, Pam. All of those books that you've taught about how awful pandemics are, some good things happen, too.
They never cover those podcasts that get made during that time.
But you guys remember that.
Yeah. There's one. It's called Feed. It's not the Feed that we've read before, but there is a zombie apocalypse book called Feed that is based on podcasting in an epidemic of zombieism.
But you guys, 100 days ago, when we started reading Sherlock Holmes stories, and I jokingly said, no worries, you know, if we finish this book, there's 56 stories and 4 novels. I don't think any of us thought we were going to be doing all of the canon.
our little two-week thing to keep our mind off of it. Yeah.
Anyway, we have one novel after this.
I know. We are almost through the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes.
And then we start reading Twilight. It's going to be so much fun.
Great. Line.
Oh, Edward.
Line. God, the acting in that movie. So let's get to the Sherlock Holmes for a moment here, shall we? The Adventure of the Three Garadebs is our story today. Holmes receives a letter from Nathan Garadeb asking him for a very peculiar quest, looking for other Garadebs.
Now, I do like the opening of this, as I like many openings, because it kind of plays with questions of genre. So it opens, it may have been a comedy or it may have been a tragedy. It cost one man his reason. It cost me a bloodletting, and it cost yet another man the penalty of the law. Yet there was certainly an element of comedy. Well, you shall judge for yourself.
How Shakespearean is that? I want to pause right there.
Yes.
That is totally Shakespearean. This is the opening of just about every Shakespeare play, laying out this is what's going to happen in this story. You judge for yourself. That's almost exactly word for word out of Henry V.
Mm-hmm.
Be too brutal?
No. No, that's not how you say that.
Exactly. So
this is, you know, ignorance is so good.
And we've got the little clues, right? One guy's going to go mad. Watson's going to have some sort of bloodletting. And someone's going to face the law. So we're just setting it up, giving us little clues. It's such a playful story. And of course, the story in the canon that it reminds me most of is one of my favorites, The Red-Headed League. You know, just a little outlandish where you're just trying to get someone out of a space for a certain period of time and you come up with the craziest story to do it. So it's fun. At the beginning of this, we also get, I remember the date very well, Watson goes on, for it was in the same month that Holmes refused a knighthood for services which may perhaps someday be described. I only refer to the matter in passing, for in my position of partner and confidant, I am obliged to be particularly careful to avoid any indiscretion. Now, I thought that was hilarious because of Watson has told us all kinds of things that Sherlock's not really comfortable with, including hinting at work he's done for the Queen, for the King, for various members of Parliament. But that's interesting that we could have Sir Sherlock Holmes, but no, he refused a knighthood.
He's modest. He's always been modest. And he really doesn't like people knowing all sorts of things.
You know that John Cleese was offered a knighthood and he also turned that down in
I did
very
not
much the same fashion. Yes, ma'am. Yes. So once again, Sherlock Holmes and John Cleese are tied in my mind.
Both a comedy.
Nathan Garrideb sent Holmes a letter, and in it he states there is money in finding another person with the same surname. I think Doyle is really setting the table very well for this mystery. The letter is discussed, but not read like it usually is in Doyle's mysteries.
And hey, great news, everybody. We always love it when there's an American, by thunder.
He even gets in a by thunder on this. That is what he really thinks we swear like. By thunder!
Although, you guys, like, this was an interesting description of the American, right? So this is Mr. John Garrideb, counselor at law. And if you guys don't mind, I want to read the description in a little detail, because it's...
Sure.
He was a short, powerful man with the round, fresh, clean-shaven face characteristic of so many American men of affairs. The general effect was chubby and rather childlike, so that one received the impression of a quite young man with a broad, set smile upon his face. His eyes, however, were arresting. Seldom in any human head have I seen a pair which bespoke a more intense inward life. So bright were they, so alert, so responsive to every change of thought. His accent was American, but was not accompanied by any eccentricity of speech. That's my favorite.
He really knows how to paint those Americans. By thunder.
By thunder.
He nails our look, because right? You know, we all look like Hoss from Bonanza, I guess.
A little right. Chubby, a little childlike, you know.
Mm-hmm. So innocent we are. Yeah, and also eventually he nails an American accent. He's got it down.
But I think it's interesting that he says no eccentricity of speech after two or three of his recent stories have included a ton of dialect, and he does not attempt to give us any American dialect as he has done in the past. You guys, here he's like, this guy he just speaks in pretty standard English.
But there is a spelling that becomes a part of the mystery here. The American spelling versus the British. So there is some discussion of eccentricities of speech here.
We're quaint and illiterate. I mean, let's be honest. That's how they look at us.
Are you using the royal we right now?
The British are so kind to us Americans at this point. He must be stupid. Oh, yes.
Quaint. He's not stupid. He's quaint.
That's right.
But he has
childlike.
But he has those bright eyes that are really taking everything in, too. So. Mm-hmm.
Out in Kansas.
Garrideb has a really crazy story here. He says there's a real estate magnate in Kansas, also named Garrideb, who left a will for an estate worth about $15 million. The estate will be shared equally among the three males, also named Garrideb, around the world. That's a weird story. That is so strange.
Well, not to give the ending away, but there's got to be easier ways to accomplish what he's trying to accomplish rather than making up this story.
And that's where Pam gets back to the Redheaded League, right? That's the idea, the crazy story to accomplish something relatively simple, like getting a guy out of his house.
We could invite him to dinner. I mean, that could possibly help out. Right.
Simple enough. Find a young lady, have her invite him to dinner. He's out of the house.
Right.
The end.
But we love this outlandish stuff. It's so much fun.
And, it is.
You know, Holmes listens politely as Garrideb tells him the story. And interestingly, John Garrideb didn't really want a detective on the case. This was Nathan Garrideb's idea. And it's fun because Holmes like asks some questions like, hey, so what have you done so far to find the third Garrideb? They need a third adult male Garrideb. And he says, oh, did you put anything in the agony columns? Oh, sure. Yeah. Did you do this? Did you do that? And I got to say, we all know it, right? You don't mess with Holmes when it comes mm-hmm. to the agony columns. So as Garadab leaves, Holmes says to Watson, I was wondering, Watson, what on earth could be the object of this man in telling us such a rigmarole of lies? There have been no advertisements in the agony columns. You know that I miss nothing there. They are my favorite covert for putting up a bird. And I would never overlook such a cock pheasant as that. I love this. Someone asking for a Garadab. My goodness, that's a regular cock pheasant, says Sherlock Holmes.
Oh my goodness. It's kind of like Inquiring Minds want to know. It's National Enquirer.
It's a personal ads. Yeah, that's the idea of the agony column is we are going to find this person through this advertisement because everybody reads this agony column. And Sherlock Holmes is absolutely the expert in London for that.
Exactly. So yes, this was a very, very poor lie.
He didn't know that it was a poor lie. To be fair, he didn't know that Sherlock Holmes was playing him with this question. Totally. And the other question about, oh, do you know the mayor of the town that you say you're from? I remember him well. And this guy says, oh, yes, he's wonderful. That's one of the easiest, right? If you're trying to find out if somebody's lying, you give them a name of somebody from that particular town. And if it's made up and they go, oh, yes, of course, I know him, then he's lying.
Of course.
The end.
So Holmes knows he's lying, and the story is now afoot.
Mm-hmm. We get so much technology in this afoot story, though, don't we? We had the gramophone in the Mazarin Stone, so here we've got the telephone.
And it feels like it's still sort of a new technology. Did you guys notice how he describes the phone call? So when Sherlock wants to speak to Nathan Garadab, the guy who actually hired him, here's what he says. Just ring him up, Watson. I did so and heard a thin, quavering voice at the other end of the line. Yes, yes, I am Mr. Nathan Garadab. Is Mr. Holmes there? I should very much like to have a word with Mr. Holmes. My friend took the instrument and I heard the usual syncopated dialogue. And I feel like it's so interesting that like, Sherlock doesn't call him himself. He's like, Watson, give him a call. Because like making a phone call is like, it's an event, you know, like you could help with it. Like it's like, you know, and then that notion of the phone call is syncopated dialogue. You know, we're just so used to hearing people on the phone. It doesn't strike us as odd, but it would at this time, being still a very new way of communicating.
Mm-hmm. See, I didn't read it that way. I read it as it's Holmesian dialogue, that typical machine that is Holmes trying to get information, not to do with the technology. But yeah, you're right. The way of communicating on the telephone is certainly different from the way of communicating face to face or on a Zoom call.
Right?
And I'm thinking a little bit about how it was portrayed maybe in movies or in television shows, where you would call the operator and the operator would connect you or something of that mm-hmm. nature. So certainly, you know, today's modern listener who is not aware that, you know, this is much different than maybe how it initially started.
Is that why you're on the phone today, Chip? Was this planned? Oh, good.
Was this planned?
I'm so proud of you.
Steve. It was planned because of computers. Sometimes do need to have upgrades and repairs.
This is the third use of the telephone in the Sherlock Holmes stories. Remember, Athenley Jones used the call box in The Sign of Four, and Holmes asked Watson to phone someone in The Illustrious Client. But this is the first time that Holmes himself is using the phone. So this is, again, Doyle being interested in the technology of the day.
And just reflecting 30 years, 30 odd years of progress, right, in every way.
Yeah, it's only been 100 days. I don't know what you're talking about, Pam. Mr. Nathan Garadab is introduced. He is quite the little strange little character, isn't he?
He certainly is. He's an older guy in his 60s. He had a cadaverous face with the dull, dead skin of a man to whom exercise was unknown, large round spectacles, and a small projecting goat's beard combined with his stooping attitude to give him an expression of peering curiosity. The general effect, however, was amiable, though eccentric. And it turns out this guy's cute little old guy is totally obsessed with his collection. He has, his rooms are sort of like a museum. He has tons of specimens, both geological and anatomical. And he says he very seldom leaves his room. I am not too strong and my researches are very absorbing. He says, he sounds adorable. He's so cute. And when someone says, I can give you $5 million. He's like, oh my goodness, I can buy more specimens. He doesn't even consider like buying a better place or, you know, like a museum
of some sort. Nope, he just wants more specimens.
So did you guys read this story or did you do this on a listening? Did you listen to an Audible?
I listened to an audiobook of this one. How about you, Pam?
I actually read it on the page, so I didn't hear a listening. I didn't hear the version.
So I listened to it with Christopher Lee, who was portraying this person. And Christopher Lee totally gave this guy this wavering voice and sort of... certainly made this a character.
I could see that.
Very nervous type of character. It was wonderful as far as the reading was. So, and for those who've never done this, you can read the electronic version as you're listening. So it kind of can move you along and really capture a lot. But anyway, Christopher Lee has done a great job.
John Garadeb rushes in with a great announcement. Another Garadeb has been found. Nathan must go and meet him 100 miles away. John is persuasive. Don't you think it would be wiser? Here I am, a wandering American with a wonderful tale. Why should he believe what I tell him? But you are a Britisher with solid references, and he's bound to take notice of what you say. I would go with you if you wished, but I have a very busy day tomorrow, and I could always follow you if you are in any trouble. This we've read this before. Come on now. When somebody says, I can't go with you, I'm busy, that's not true.
I'm too busy to pursue the $5 million that has had me reach out to you in the first place. I have a hairdressing appointment? I
gotta wash my hair. That's right.
Something important. Very important. Very important things. And of course, an American... You know, once again, fights himself because Doyle's going to write him that way.
Yes, you're right. It is Doyle slighting the American, but at the same time, it makes sense to the story a little bit that this brash American guy would not make the same impression that a solid British person would. Mm-hmm. Holmes realizes that the third Garadeb cannot be a British man because of the wording in the ad. The American must have posted it himself. How about that?
And Watson realizes that there's a problem with the ad.
Yeah, the word plow with a W is not the British way to spell plow. And so it can't have been posted by a British person. This must have been an American. Silly. It seems to me that the antagonist here took advice from Holmes. Holmes said, oh, did you put an ad in the paper? Yeah. And so that's exactly what he goes and does.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Doyle has a new adjective. Did you notice this? Mm-hmm. He puts the word friend in front of names now. This started in The Sign of Four when Sherlock referred to friend Thaddeus. Now, in this story, we get both friend Watson and friend Lestrade. Isn't that interesting?
What about friend Thaddeus? Who was the brother of who?
Oh, friend Thaddeus? He had a brother, right?
He had a brother, Steve. I heard he had a brother.
Oh, yeah. Brother Bartholomew!
Oh, there he is.
Yes, I put that in there just to do that.
Excellent.
just like home, Steve. So reserved we are.
I have to admit, I was a little bit surprised to see Friend Lestrade in this very late story. Although I guess it was 1902. But, I mean, Friend Lestrade has to be, you know, nearing retirement at this point.
Mm-hmm. And he's just mentioned. He doesn't actually show up in the story. It's just, hey, I had contacted Friend Lestrade and gotten information. The information that he got is the true identity of the American who is saying that his name is John Garadeb. He finds out that this is a a rogue named James Winter, also known as Moorcroft, also known as Killer Evans. He's a native of Chicago. He's known to have shot three men in the States, escaped from penitentiary through political influence. Nobody in Chicago has that. I don't know why. Is that? Steve, oh,
Steve, how does that even happen? Why would they even portray Chicago that way? That's so much in the past.
Oh, turns out, yeah, that's everybody in the world. That's what they think of as Chicago is gangsters and getting out of jail through political influence. Oh,
all he needs to do is throw like some gun violence in there and we've got it all.
Oh, wait. He
shot three men.
Oh!
Well, and I really like a couple, in this long discussion, there's a couple more details I would note. So Sherlock says, I found his chubby face smiling up at me from the Rogue's Portrait Gallery. So again, the American gangster as like a little bit more portly than the average British. And then he says, he's been under police supervision. Very dangerous man, usually carries arms and is prepared to use them. That is our bird, Watson, a sporting bird, as you must admit. So don't worry, Chip, the gun violence is there.
Well, there we go. Now he needs a zoot suit.
This although, is still the 1920s. That's a little early.
Although Doyle does talk a little bit about his dress.
His outfit, yes.
That's right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. Holmes addresses his outfit. That's earlier in the show. Yes. Very American. You know, very American. Well-worn and, not of America. Yeah. Adopt the local garb.
So it's fun because in this story, we get just such a great character with Nathan Garadev, the cute little collector guy. And then we also get a pretty, interesting criminal figure. And then we get the usual charming dynamic between Watson and Sherlock. And so the details here are really lovely. I think at the end of the interview with John Garadev, a.k.a. the killer, our little problem draws to a close, said Sherlock. No doubt you have outlined the solution in your own mind. I can make neither head nor tail of it. The head is surely clear enough, and the tail we should see tomorrow. Did you notice nothing curious about that advertisement? I saw that the word plow was misspelled. So it's so, I mean, this is just the typical conversation between Holmes and Watson. Surely you have solved it. No, I have no idea. But it's not like he noticed nothing. He just didn't know how to process the misspelling of plow. He noticed it, just didn't know what to do with it.
They just don't know how to spell American.
We don't have as many U's. We're missing a lot of U's, so we take that's U's true. Out of all the words, that's all.
All right, and I'm using my memory, and my memory could be fuzzy, but I think a lot of these spellings came from Merriam-Webster, the dictionary, and where he changed the English language to make the current spellings that the United States would use versus what Britain would use. Yeah.
We'll have to look into that. English professor of some sort.
Sadly, I have no idea, but as a Canadian, I love extra U's in the neighborhood.
They're your favorites.
Yes, exactly.
Holmes goes out and returns with a grave announcement. This is a more serious matter than I had expected, Watson. It is fair to tell you so, though I know it will only be an additional reason to you for running your head into danger. I should know my Watson by now, but there is danger, and you should know it. Well, it is not the first we have shared, Holmes. I hope it may not be the last.
Aww. Aww. This is where, is this the love theme? Do they start playing that during this time?
You guys, there's a pretty good love theme here, right? We're coming to it. So Holmes hands Watson a revolver. He says, I have my old favorite with me. If our Wild West friend tries to live up to its nickname, we must be ready for him. I'll give you an hour for a siesta, Watson, and then I think it will be time for our Rider Street adventure. And it's just...
That's just so full of imagery. Like, okay, Wild West friend. Okay, he's an American and he shoots guns. We have to be ready for a gunfight, Wild West style. I'll give you an hour for a siesta. Where is that coming
They're
from?
Getting older, Steve. They can't just hang out on adventures. And of course, Holmes has that special constitution where he doesn't need to eat or sleep when he's on a case. But Watson needs to get his rest. He can't be.
But why siesta instead of rest or nap? Why did Doyle choose siesta there?
He's international, Steve. He's international.
No, but I think that in Europe, it's very much like a Mediterranean thing. Siesta is a Mediterranean thing, not a British thing.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Oh. Okay, but it's coming out of nowhere in this story. There's no Mediterraneans in this story.
Yeah, and there's never been, like, there's never been any note that Watson naps. I mean, this is a late Holmesian.
This is an old Doyle thinking of his own routine and thinking of napping. I got it.
If I was going to strap on a holster, I would take a nap first.
Got it. John Garideb lured Nathan out of his museum-like rooms in order to break in to get what he's looking for, a set of counterfeit plates for making counterfeit notes. Dun, dun, dun. There's a whole shootout. Garideb shoots Watson. Holmes cracks Garideb on the head with his pistol. That's the end.
Take that, old chap.
And then you get the wonderful John Locke moment. Then my friend's wiry arms were around me, and he was leading me to a chair. You're not hurt, Watson. For God's sake, say that you are not hurt. It was worth a wound. It was worth many wounds to know the depth of loyalty and love which lay behind the cold mask. The clear, hard eyes were dimmed for a moment, and the firm lips were shaking. For the one and only time, I caught a glimpse of a great heart, as well as of a great brain. All my years of humble but single-minded service culminated in that moment of revelation. It's nothing.
Oh my God.
It's a mere scratch. He had ripped up my trousers with his pocket knife.
Well.
Why is there shipping of these two characters?
It's hard to figure that out, right?
These two people love each other absolutely. And this is great writing here. Doyle is giving us the emotion of these two characters on a wonderful literary level.
But a flesh wound, Steve.
Just but a scratch. Your leg's off. No, it isn't.
I better rip up your trousers nonetheless. But it is a wonderful moment. So it's funny because it's both a moment of, you know, friendship, companionship. These are men who've been in a million adventures now. They've known each other 30 years. And, you know, this is a culminating moment mm-hmm. of their friendship. But at the same time, it definitely invites the kinds of stories that get written about these two wonderful characters, which brings us to the ending. Now, this is a dime novel ending, which walks you through all of the characters and gives you their fate. And it's so sad. Poor Nathan Garideb. He was destroyed by the adventure and the loss of the money. And now he's in a nursing home. And honestly, for someone who's that kind of collector, I'm a little bit surprised by that ending for Nathan.
I am too. Why would this have to be the case? Because he left and then came back and found out there was his home was broken into? It just seems, you're right. I think this is an odd.
I think it's the loss of the money. I think that in his mind, he had counted on this money and counted his chickens before they hatched and it just destroyed him.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that this is not just about John Garideb, our Chicago gangster. It was a glad day at the yard when the Prescott outfit was discovered. For though they knew that it existed, they had never been able, after the death of the man, to find out where it was. Evans had indeed done great service and caused several worthy CID men to sleep the sounder, for the counterfeiter stands in a class by himself as a public danger. They would willingly have subscribed to that soup plate medal of which the criminal had spoken, but an unappreciative bench took a less favorable view, and the killer returned to those shades from which he had just emerged. So then, basically, our killer returns to jail, which he just got out of. And these counterfeiting plates are located, finally, so that we can put an end to the potential danger caused by counterfeit. Now, that kind of gave me pause. Do you guys think the counterfeiter really is in a class of his own as a public danger?
With his guns and all the chances of other crimes around the counterfeiting, yeah, I'd say that there's a lot of danger around this man.
And maybe it speaks to the danger of organized crime.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah, I feel like we have crimes against persons seem to me so much more dangerous than passing fake bills.
But that funding of all of those other crimes, that's, I think, what Doyle's trying to say here is that...
And that's why he made him from Chicago, I'm sure.
Did they mention also that Prescott's bills were virtually undetectable?
Yes.
So, I mean, these were not just very good. They were so good that very unlikely they would have been detected.
Could have taken down the whole economy, theoretically. Yeah. I can see that. So this is fun. This is one of those silly adventures, right? There's so much silliness to this one, but it's got a lot of meat to it. This is one of the more in-depth silly adventures, isn't it?
Agreed. And I think this one is a really fun one. It's on some people's like top 10 lists for the canon, and I can see why.
And absolutely for the casebook, this is certainly one of the finer ones.
I'll agree with that. I will agree with that. That this is on my top list for the casebook, but not for the canon. There's some much better storytelling earlier
by
in the canon.
Thunder, Steve, loosen up.
You Americans and your philosophy and your thought patterns. Ugh. And stop eating so much.
That's right. You pudgy Americans. It's all that grain, all that corn, all that
you
wheat and
dumb,
Kansas.
Dumb pudgy Americans. This is great. I hope everybody is listening and having as much fun with this as we are. 100 episodes, Pam and Chip. Thank you so much for all your time going into this fun that we've been having. I hope everybody's been listening along. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text, send us an email, follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes, and go to our dedicated Sherlock Holmes website, sandwichesatirregularhours.com, for all 100 of these conversations that we've had so far. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Centennial Chip Essenplug.
And I'm Pam Vidor.
Bless the COVID-19 and the friendships she forges.
Aww. Look, that was sweet. That was Doyle-level sweetness from Chip. Aww.